This week, the Republican Party's 7-year attempt to dismantle the Affordable Care Act kicked the bucket after 3 Republican senators, all women, withheld their votes. One of them, Shelley Moore Caputo of West Virginia, said, quote, "I didn't come to Washington to hurt people." So Donald Trump declared that he would, quote, "let Obamacare fail." And in fact, he has plenty of options for moving that failure along. He could refuse to reimburse insurance companies for reducing low-income customers' out-of-pocket costs. He could stop enforcing the mandate that most Americans have health coverage. And he could refrain from advertising the Affordable Care Act's fall sign-up period. All this would inevitably hit poor people the hardest, a fact that does not surprise Jack Freck, who spent 30 years serving the poor in Appalachian, Ohio, and also was the guide for our recent series, Busted: America's Poverty Myths. Check it out. Freck was saddened, but not surprised by the proposals put forward by the House and the Senate. He says that such ideas are both perennial and bipartisan. For example, the Clinton administration bundled what were once federal welfare dollars into block grants to states, where the money often is misdirected or hoarded, even as it's shriveled by inflation. I spoke to Jack Freck in March, just after the House passed its replacement for Obamacare.
Basically, you know, what's happening here is the Republicans do not believe in government in general, and specifically some of these entitlements. They generally don't believe that there is a right to health care. That's why now they talk in terms of people having access to it.
I think people are going to have access to health care and better health care, and they're going to be empowered in their health
care. So people are not going to lose their health insurance because of this?
It will be accessible. They will have the opportunity to have health care, I can assure you.
Well, the truth of the matter is back when we had 40 million people who were uninsured, everyone had the opportunity to buy health care if they could afford it. What's familiar to me going way back is, of course, the same kind of assault on government that I remember vividly during the Reagan administration. Rather than declaring the media as the enemy, he declared government as the enemy.
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, "I'm from the government and I'm here to help."
And he similarly appointed people to cabinet positions who actually opposed the programs that they were now running. Basically, are just taking a whole step back in history to the time when people could have health care if they could afford it. And if you can't, then it was kind of like, that's not government's problem.
Their underlying assumption is that more money will flow into the economy if we tie less of it up in big government, and all boats will rise.
This has been the myth that has been promoted by this party all these years. We've already done tax cuts for years and years. Those things have not stimulated the economy here, have not grown living wage jobs. Now, the trouble is, from the Democratic side, their pushback has been what I would call pushback light. I mean, I think the Democrats became so enamored with what they had done with NAFTA, what they had done with welfare reform, all the things that happened under Bill Clinton, all that kind of stuff did not benefit us in the long run. And the hubris of the party will not allow them to accept that their basic tenets of their philosophy have not worked. And that's true from both parties.
You say that the Democrats are so loath to admit they were wrong about NAFTA and about block granting aid to the poor to the states and those things that they're sort of hoist on their own petard. I wonder, though, when the Republicans talk against big government, talk about reducing the role of government, can't the Democrats offer some big pushback there?
Well, they could, but Barack Obama, throughout his whole term in office, all they ever reported on was the increase in private sector jobs. They almost never ever even talked about public sector jobs and the fact that there were more public sector jobs lost during the Obama administration than any of the previous administrations, even under Reagan. And then the fact that the biggest cut in food stamps happened at the direction of the Obama administration, not at the direction of the Republicans. And the other thing to remember is the Obamacare program itself was, in fact, a private sector intervention in healthcare originally proposed by the Heritage Foundation. It basically forced everyone to buy insurance through the private sector. And, you know, once they dropped the public option, it was entirely privatized. And then problems that all cropped up with this, with increased premiums, with increased deductibles, with increased costs, and with lack of access. People in the private sector running those businesses made those choices, and it essentially then was used to hang the Obamacare program.
So you're saying that since the Democratic administration and other Democratic administrations have done things that have reduced the role of government, they're poor advocates for the power of government to do good.
Yes. In order for them to do so, and they should do so, the first thing they have to do is admit they were wrong. I mean, everyone talks about how hard it is for Donald Trump to ever admit he's wrong about anything. Well, you know, I don't think that Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi or Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama are any better at saying these are the things that we did that were wrong. And what you will hear is when these debates start happening, the Republicans are going to say, but you already agreed to this concept for welfare reform. We worked together on those things. So now we're telling you that we're just trying to do those same things and offer that same success for the Medicaid program.
In fact, on the news the other day, former Republican presidential candidate and Republican Congressman Rick Santorum was sharing a platform with Gene Sperling, who was an economist in the Clinton administration.
And Santorum was the one who said, but Gene, don't you remember when you and I worked together to have this great success with welfare reform?
I believe that their answer here is for Republicans to take a step back and do what Gene Sperling and I did together back in the 1990s. Gene and I worked on a bill called welfare reform. And what Gene and Bill Clinton and a lot of other Republicans and Democrats did was to take this money, give it back to the states, let the states innovate.
And threw it back to Sperling, who was just dumbstruck and basically said, well, that was different.
And I appreciate Senator Santorum mentioning moments we were bipartisan, but I don't agree with him in this case. In terms of Medicaid.
But what Sperling did not say is, yes, we worked together on all those things and they were a disaster. This was terrible for poor people. Their lives are infinitely worse off now than they were before that. That's what he needed to say. He never said that. There has never been a time when anyone other than Bernie in the Democratic Party has really stepped up and said, no, this was a failure. This was not a success. It was a terrible failure.
You've described the failures of both political parties and also of the media. So let's dig into that. What's the problem here? Is it that reporters just haven't done their homework, or is there something else going on?
I don't think they've done their homework. There may be a bigger question as to why they haven't done their homework. The easiest way for them to structure a debate is to have a Republican on and have a Democrat on and say, okay, go at it. I don't think that folks in the media have been able to take the time and homework they need to do to actually be the arbitrators of the truth and to call people on both sides and say, these are the facts that we know about this issue. And of course, there is not the same kind of local reporting, investigative reporting going on about these issues to build up to a more national understanding about it.
One of the chief narratives that emerged after the election was that the mainstream media had lost touch with the lived reality of many people.
Yes.
Seen any improvement in the media coverage since?
I have. I have seen better coverage, sending real people out to Kentucky and West Virginia and Ohio and places like that, and talking to people, mostly the angle they're looking at is, do you realize you're voting against your own best interests? I mean, mm-hmm. That seems to be what they're looking for out there, and they're finding people who are hurting. At least they're getting out there, and they're talking to them.
And they don't feel they're voting against their economic self-interest?
I don't think they believe that yet. These folks are hardworking people, and what they want are the living wage jobs that they used to have. Donald Trump is the guy who stepped up and said, I'm going to give those back to you. They were so desperate, and people did not understand how desperate they were, that they basically said, okay, you know, we will give you a chance. And the other thing to keep in mind about that is that people who struggle every day just to survive do not spend their time on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, waiting for the latest comment or goofy thing that Donald Trump's going to say and the mounds of response that come from the media. They're not going to be able to look at the nuance of the different Medicaid program versus block grant versus entitlement. Not that they're not smart enough. They just don't have the time. Their lives are consumed by paying the rent, keeping their car running, getting to work all different hours of the day or night. And so they're still waiting for the promise made to them about their lives getting better, about them still having health care like he promised, about them having living wage jobs like he promised. All the great things he promised, they're still waiting for those things to happen.
I hear you when you say these people are too busy to be having rich and varied media diets that can provide them with all kinds of information. But I wonder, do they have any at all? Or simply, they heard him on the campaign trail. He's never really left the campaign trail. And the information that comes out just isn't getting through.
Well, this goes back to the core issue about Trump in the first place. They were desperate enough to reach out to vote for this guy with just pie-in-the-sky promises because their lives were so desperate to begin with. And so it's not as though hoping that he succeeds is, you know, a political thing for them, an ideological thing. This is their hope at survival.
Okay, so journalists are trying to suss out people whose experience is so often different from their own. How do you recommend they do that?
My greatest wish for journalism has been just that they go out and report the real facts for what people's lives are like out there. Instead of looking at this from a standpoint of politics, they need to be looking at this as what is the status of people in our country? What are their lives like? What are their issues? And then you follow from that to the parties to say, are either of these parties addressing the issues that we find when we go out and talk to Americans? You don't need to go very far to do that. You need to go out with just an open mind and talk to them in a non-judgmental way. I think a lot of folks, even out in the field, when they're out there talking to the right people, their whole thing is, why did you vote wrong? Why did you make the mistake of voting for Donald Trump? Well, you know, you need to approach it much more from the standpoint of why was that the right decision for you in your mind? And the other thing is that these folks are very fatalistic and don't feel like they have the power to control this. The last lever they thought they pulled to fix this was the one where they voted for Donald Trump.
Okay, Jack. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Brooke.
Check your feed on Friday for this week's show, in which social scientists, researchers, and Bob explore their own doubts and the value of doubt in a very dubious time. I'm Brooke Gladstone.